This episode brought to you by Syrup Co. Syrup Co. makes simple syrups for your cocktails, coffee drinks, sodas, and more. Nate and Jacob started Syrup Co. in 2020 as a way for people to create tasty drinks at home that are easy to make and super accessible. They cook, bottle, and label every single bottle themselves right in Salt Lake. From their roasted jalapeno syrup using fresh roasted jalapenos to their cherry pie syrup using tart cherries from a small orchard in Willard, Utah. They try to use the freshest and most local ingredients when making their syrups. With fantastic flavors and an Instagram full of recipes, they will not let you down. Find their syrups at a handful of locations and buy directly on their website by going to www.syrupco.com. Use the code TASTEMASTERS upon checking out on their website for 15% off your order. That's right. Tell them we sent you. Plug in the code TASTEMASTERS and save 15% off your order. Until the next syrup, my friends. Listening to the Taste Masters, where we delve into the world of craft beer, liquor, and other beverages. All right, guys, fun episode today. I'm riding solo, no co-host today, and I have in front of me a special guest, Miss Jay Vandeverf. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, David.
Jay, thanks for taking time of your day to hang out with me today.
Yeah, no, but, thank you for inviting me. Yeah, this is awesome.
Because you're secretly a beer nerd.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a beer nerd, but you're like an advanced beer nerd, and I want to hear about your nerdisms, if that's a word.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
So let's get off the bat. You just pour us a beverage, so let's go right there. Okay. Which beverage was this?
Okay, so you told me to bring some good examples of different beers that I like. Starting off, we're doing a local one from Grid City. It's the House Pilsner, and it's one of the better or best examples you can find of a Czech Pilsner around here of just having, they take the time and effort to do the double decoction. They, you know, baby it. They give it 6 weeks like you should with a lager. And it turns out phenomenal. It has the nice perfumey notes. It's very simple Pilsner-y grain bill, nice honey on the back end. It's a solid beer.
I mean, Grid City, can they do wrong right now?
No, not really right now.
So when you go to Grid City, oh man, that's always good.
Yeah, this is so my good. Go-to.
It is. Every time you go to Grid City, this is your...
Yeah, if I go to Grid City, unless if they have something new on tap.
Try it.
I'll try that, but it's always for the House Pilsner.
So how many milk shots have you had over there?
I've only had one.
Oh, was it House Pilsner or the Hoppy Pilsner?
It was House Pilsner.
Yeah, so I've had both. I think I like the Hoppy Pilsner milk shot better because I get they put lemon drop hop in there.
Okay.
I think I get that at the very end. It's like, ooh, I like that. It's like a nice, like at the very end, just gets
you. Just a little zest. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, I always try to race people at the table, like milk shots. Yeah. And I never win, but it's so fun.
See, when I went, the people at my table didn't want to race. So it was just me by myself drinking a milk shot. So.
Yeah, you got to throw it back. Yeah. You just got to throw it back.
But no, it's a fun place. Having like the milk shots and having all the different pours, the cask and everything. It's a fun place to go experiment and try some new things.
I wish they had, because I interviewed them and good friends of mine, but I think one of my favorite beers that's underrated there is their brown ale. And that one just won up in Idaho, I believe, for something. Yeah, the brown ale won for a bronze, I believe. Their extra brown ale. And that one's my favorite. Out of the three, the extra, the regular, and the imperial, the extra, we all agreed if that one, we could have a cask strength. Oh.
Yeah. It's the only way to have it.
Let it warm up and just, oh man.
Have that off cask and it's such a good example of, it's an English brown ale from, if I remember right, versus your American. You just can't find them anywhere. No. So, or they have like hazelnut and a bunch of other things in it.
But and that's like, the good thing about Grid City is they're going like the old school traditional and the, you know, like Templin. I like Templin too because Templin's, you know, roots.
Yeah.
It tries to make it as traditional as possible. And I appreciate that.
Oh yeah.
And as a beer maker and lover, you gotta appreciate the good styles and the traditionals. But then there's weird, like we'll talk about this later, but like in the weird, you know, you got the weird, funky, just all sorts of what the fuck kind of beers, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, KJ, question for you. Who are you? Like, where you come from? Who, like, Tell me about your life. Let's go. We'll start from Baby J. Let's go.
Okay, start from Baby J. So I grew up in Portland, Oregon, or just south of it. And so I spent pretty much all of my early life all in Oregon. Went to school there for electrical engineering. So my background is engineering. I met my wife there.
In Portland?
Yep, at Portland. We grew up 10 minutes from each other's houses, but only met in college. So, yeah, it was nice to kind of see and be close proximity.
I like that.
Yeah. And so we got married. We went out to Minnesota so that she could finish up her law degree.
Oh, gotcha. I was like, that's cold. Like, why? Yeah. Why would you go there?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Did you like it?
For school. Oh, I loved it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
They're coming from Portland, my beer background was all IPAs and very, you know, hardcore West Coast IPA is the only way. Went to Minnesota and you could not find an IPA to save your life. So what they have, though, is a lot more Belgian beers, wild fermentation, all coming from that Scandinavian background that settled that area. And it just opened up an entire different world for me.
Oh, man. So, that's so cool. I didn't think about that. To me, I just think Minnesota, I think snow up to your neck and I just want to die.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's cold, but it's sunny during the winter versus rainy 9 months out of the year.
Right.
Like in the Portland. West Coast. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then you went, your wife was finishing her law degree. So is she a lawyer?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. So she's a lawyer. She does disability law.
What's her name?
Lakshmi.
Oh my God. Shout out.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So
look at you smiling. Look at you just ear to ear. I love it.
So yeah, she does, disability law.
That's cool.
Yeah. Way smarter than anyone else I know. But yeah, we just spent a couple years out there and came back out this way because she has some family here in Utah.
Really?
And that's
Salt Lake, like Salt Lake proper.
Yeah. Salt Lake proper. Yep.
Gotcha.
And so now we're here.
How long have you been in Idaho or in Utah?
We've been here for about 3 years. It feels a lot less because of COVID and all.
Yeah, because COVID is like that little question mark.
Yeah, you
here.
Kind of like, does it count?
You kind of, everyone erased it a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, exactly. So
3 years, wow. And so tell me about being in Utah. Like, what do you do? What's going on in Utah?
So in Utah, outside of just working and stuff, I homebrew. I am a part of some of the homebrew clubs and everything around here. I try to judge beer for BJCP and recently I started teaching classes for BJCP as well.
Gotcha. So tell people who don't know, what's BJCP?
So BJCP is the Beer Judge Certification Program.
Okay.
It is put on by, I believe, the American Homebrew Association, or by the same founders at least. And so the what it is it's a style guideline, almost like template for what beer style should be. So you can drink a beer, you can enjoy it. You can think a beer is perfectly fine. There is nothing wrong with that. But it's almost like if you think of like dog shows or dog breeds and stuff, like you can have a mixed dog and that's perfectly fine. They're going to be loving and great. But if you start getting to like that dog world of like what's a purebred, you know, schnauzer versus a purebred black lab or something,
sure.
It's the same thing of like what is that classic traditional Czech Pilsner versus your classic traditional hazy IPA.
Okay.
So it's just a way of adding guidelines to be able to judge those beers accordingly.
Does it make beer drinking difficult for you?
Yes.
Are you an out loud judge, or are you like a secret, like, oh, this beer sucks? Or you'd be like, hey, I don't like this beer. Like, what kind of person are you? Because I feel like I'm on the teeter-totter. I feel like to my close friends, I'm like, I don't like this. Or they ask my opinion.
Yep.
Like, hey, you're quiet. Why aren't you saying anything? You must not like the beer. I'm like, ah, shit. Like, I don't want to diss on it. I don't know. Be right.
Well, no, and that's where often it'll come up at like homebrew meetings and stuff. People will learn like who the judges are and will come up and be like, hey, can you judge my beer? Or like, give me feedback. And the first question is always, do you want honest feedback on the style, like, or do you just want, like, is it a good beer?
What would you rather do? Would you rather give straight up forward, like, honest feedback, or would you just kind of...
The giving style feedback at this point is a lot easier for me because I've done a lot of practice with that. That giving giving just like, is this a good beer or not, is feels very subjective. And normally it's a, yeah, it's a good beer.
It's a, you can like drink it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I could love a beer, but you wouldn't love it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and everyone has those beers that are just like their beers that they go to when they don't want to have to think about judging beers. So
I mean, who judges your beer then?
Anyone. I take anyone's feedback.
Cause I mean,
I definitely do. My wife does. She's not a beer judge, but she's plenty knowledgeable.
Has she become a beer snob lately? Like, is she?
Yeah, she just, yeah, by being
with you.
Close proximity.
Gotcha. Yeah. So does she like all beer, or is she?
She definitely will try most beers, at this point, and will really give it, you know, the time of day to try it out.
So. Gotcha. And you guys will talk about it and whatnot. What's your favorite style?
My favorite style, Flanders Red.
Oh,
hands down.
You can't get that in Utah.
No, you can't get it anywhere. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. When's the last time you had a Flanders Red?
Taking the class. And yeah. So that's where Flanders Red is just one of those you never can find, but it's the perfect balance of like acidity, malt complexity, like balance. Just,
I like that. It's your favorite style. So what's your wife's favorite style?
She's a lot more traditional, probably just the pale ale.
Pale ale, just simple pale ale. Boom. Yep. I like that. Nothing wrong with that. I love that.
Oh, yeah, no. Pale ales are great. Hard to make.
I'm on a smash pale kick right now. So I'm doing a lot of smash pales. Just like, it's just one. I love it.
Yeah.
It exemplifies the hop and the malt. I'm like, yes, that's how it should be.
Well, boom. And that's where the hard part with them is that balance between it.
Oh, for sure. And again, I say this a lot, but on the can, Grid City has taste, balance, finish.
Yeah.
And I respect the hell out of that because I think all beer, all cider, all fermentation, like it should be balanced.
Yeah.
It should taste great and it should finish. You know, I don't want to like, is that a gym sock on the back of my throat? Like,
yeah,
what's
exactly.
going on there? And Grits, what Jeremy's doing over there is he's a master. He's underrated. The guy's badass. And Grid City is a good place to be at. It's always friendly. It's always welcoming. The food's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And they have vegetarian and vegan options that are out of this world that taste better than the non-vegan ones, I think.
Agreed.
And my wife, first time, I've known her for 9 years, 10 years, shit, 11 years. I have no idea. I've known my wife too long, okay? And she has never once, as long as I know her, has craved a beer. Ever. She's never been like, hey, I need a beer. We went to Grid City, had the cream and the nitro cream ale, their award-winning one.
Yep.
And I remember one day she was sitting there like, hey, I'm craving a beer. Can we go back to Grid City and get that cream ale? What the fuck did you just say to me? It's like the brakes. Okay. Yes. Let's go. Get in the car. But I mean if my wife can love that, and now she crushes about Grid City. That's her favorite brewery.
Oh, yeah. No, they really surprised me.
It's a good place to be, like, crush on them. I'm okay with that. But winning an award, not being a year old, that's phenomenal.
Oh, no, it's excellent.
I couldn't believe it, dude. Oh, man. So I want to go into, you said the Belgian styles, right?
Yes.
So back in Minnesota, what was captivating about those Belgian styles?
So the thing that was so captivating about them is they just have a different profile than you will ever find in American beers. They have this kind of spicy, phenolic characteristic. Even the esters are a little bit different that are just really unique to the region, especially when you start getting into like more like wild fermentation, like lambics and everything, where it has so much to do with the region of Belgium that it was brewed in, because it's all open vats. It really, that characteristic, you can't find anywhere else.
Right. And it could be a different time of years, right?
Yep, exactly. And so that's where, especially like for all those lambics and stuff, you start getting to characteristics that you would never think you would ever want inside a beer, like horse blanket, like barnyard funk and just some weird stuff.
Right.
But when it's put in the beer and it comes out right, there's something about it that's untangible and just great.
Yeah, and it's hard to explain to people
who
haven't tried it yet, because I think in Utah County, we have to make a lot of kettle sours, and I'll be honest, I'm not a kettle sour fan. I just don't like kettle sours, but I can appreciate making them, and I know, I can try one and be like, yeah, I like this one, this is a good one, or I can judge it how I want, whatever, and I can give feedback on it, but when it comes back to those open fermentation, it's like, oh my God, I don't know what this is. This is fantastic. And like you sit there, every sip is like a different like journey down into this rabbit hole of just flavor, right?
Yep,
and,
exactly.
I think the last one I had was at Crooked Stave in Denver, and they had and it was just, what is this? I got carrot, I got underground like I said, Horse Blanket was a great one, and it's just like sitting there, what is going on? Yeah. Just, it's the best.
So that's one of the big characteristics. So not all of them, not all Belgians are that kind of crazy. A lot of them are more scaled back.
Like yeah.
One of the other ones I brought is a classic Belgian blonde.
Let's go.
Yeah. And so this guy is Lef Blonde, spelled L-E-F-F-E. And so this is one of the classic beer examples for a Belgian blonde. Unlike American Belgian blondes, they are a lot stronger. This is saying at like 6.6% versus what you would typically think of like an American blonde of being 5% or something. A lot of head.
Look at that head. You like that? What yeah. A pour. So this, so you said the difference between an Belgian blonde and American blonde was?
So not just the alcohol percentage. That's just one of them. There's a ton that's different. So for a Belgian or for American blonde, it's going to be a nice kind of balance between a little bit more malt forward with some subtle background hops that, and it's going to be a little bit more sessionable. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more straightforward. And a lot of times people blend it with fruits and things because it's a lot more neutral of a palate.
Okay.
Versus Belgian blonde, when we get into this, it's going to have the like Belgian spice characteristics of like phenolics, clove. I forget if this one has a little bit of banana.
It's coming off the yeast.
And this is all coming off the yeast, and it just has to do with that Belgian yeast. And one of the other ones is because they're a little bit higher alcohol content for a pretty like light malt bill kind of a beer, you actually get this character that is a alcoholic like spice character. If you think almost like liquor or something, like you can get like a little bit of a spiciness off of like say drinking like whiskey or something.
Okay.
It's obviously not liquor strength by any means, but you get this kind of additional spice that is unique to having that extra alcohol.
Now, I don't know about you, but on the nose, I get a little bit of apple there.
There is a little bit of apple. You actually get on the flavor as well.
Let's see if I can get it.
Yep. You get definitely some of your banana in the background.
Is that vanilla? See, I feel like the interesting.
I could see maybe a little bit of vanilla.
Okay.
Yeah.
You get the clove on the very end.
Yeah, you get some of the clove.
It's like a touch of banana, like phenolic banana, the very very end.
Well, and that's where like none of it is gonna be like
showcasing, like boom, boom,
like overboard right now.
Gotcha.
If you start going into maybe your Belgian golden strongs, you might start getting that a little bit more.
See, are you a fan of those?
Yeah.
I feel like if you go into the triple quad, it's like, man, it's hot as hell. Like, it's it's just, woo.
They can be, but they need to be aged more often than not. And that's one of the big issues with Trappist beers here in the U.S. or barley wines or really anything that's that high of alcohol needs to be aged out so that it can start developing some really, like, soft alcoholic notes.
Yeah, I got some barley wine from Level Crossing I'm holding on to. Hopefully it ages. Yeah. I'm just like, I want to take, because I tried one right off the bat, and I'm like, oh, like I put hair in my chest. It's like, here we go.
But exactly.
I need to tone it back, and I want to see how it turns out and how well it is. But that's the hard thing about barley wine is you got to wait.
Yeah, well, and that's where even with the Trappist beers, like their like whole background is being brewed at monasteries, sitting in a cellar until it's ready. Like there was no pressure of like, oh, we gotta get this out the door to sell it.
Yeah.
That you can give it all the time in the world that you need.
Right. And have you ever been to Europe?
I haven't. Or not to like Belgium. I've been to Italy and Spain.
And how was that? Tell me about that. Was it awesome?
Oh, it was great experience.
Why did you go out there for?
Honeymoon and then family vacation.
Where was the honeymoon?
It was Caribbean like cruise or something.
No big deal. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Did you have awesome beers out there? Wines?
Awesome wines, for sure. We definitely had a lot of really good wine because, hey, when you're in Rome, like, drink wine.
When in Rome, right?
Leave the beer for everywhere else that's more beer related.
Yeah, I would exactly. You don't go to Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory and have like
And have a hamburger. Exactly. Like you go there for the candy. Exactly. So lots of good wine. Had a really fun excursion where we got to go to a like 600 old like wine estate and like do a wine tasting and stuff. And it was awesome.
That's a bucket list right there. That's awesome. That's
it was
so
super
cool.
So
have you ever tried be in the wine world at all? Like, you, like hey, I want to judge wine?
I tried making wine once. Before I tried making beer, really was getting into beer. And I went to, I talked to like a vineyard and I like helped them out with some of their like, pretty much helped them out with their crops of just like cutting back all the vines and like putting them up, back into their, trellis and stuff to help them out to get some free grapes.
Okay.
Took those, tried making wine. And it turned out terrible. And so I think from that experience, I went to beer and it worked out much better.
You like beer better.
That I kind of stuck with that. Someday I would love to revisit wine. I think it makes a big difference having some background with fermentation in general, sanitation, cleaning, and all the things that you just have to learn whether it's wine or whether it's beer.
I need to introduce you to Joel because Joel at Mountain West, he has 20 years in the winery background. So that's where he came from. And so now a winemaker turned into a cider maker just to see his craft evolve. It's just weird and fun and I love it. It's just really cool. It's like seeing a home brewer become a brewmaster. Like I love that. Like it's kind of put it up there and change it. But have you ever thought about brewing? You make cider?
I do make cider. I love making cider. I recently started making mead as well.
Ooh.
For fun.
How's that going?
It's going well, actually. It's really easy.
Mead is like a good table drink. Just
It's just a summertime. Pound back a couple, right?
Mm-hmm. No. Fine. yes.
Yeah. No, it's a fun one to do and really tailor it back. A lot of people, when they think of mead, they're thinking of like 17% rocket fuel.
Yeah.
Versus really your mead should be, there's that range for it, but for me, at least, a good mead is in that like 9 to 11% range. And it's a lot more like a wine, essentially.
So, with the BJCP, you're saying, could you ever go past that and do mead, cider judging? I mean, sommelier, like we're doing wine judging. Have you ever thought about that, like branching out a little bit?
Yeah. Right now, I'm just working on BJCP for getting up my rank and all, and after that, I want to go into cider. And then hopefully into mead. And then maybe after all of that, I'll branch off into spirits and
That'd be
wine.
Awesome.
They're just really kind cool. of become the know-it-all for alcohol.
That's okay. What's wrong with that?
No, so it's a fun hobby.
What's it like to be a judge? Like, are you called upon a lot to come judge events?
The higher your rank is, the more you're called upon. And just because of doing like the class and like getting to meet people. I'm definitely getting called upon a little bit more for like competitions of like, hey, cool. We're starting this up. Do you mind helping judge? Or emails coming through of, hey, there's this judging in Idaho.
Yeah.
And stuff. Do you want to come up? So.
And how long did it take you to become where you are now? Like, you said there's steps, there's higher ranking. So what's your rank right now today?
So right now it's only certified. The next step is going to be national.
Okay.
Hardest part is finding a test to take. For national.
Is that because of COVID or is that because of it's just hard to take?
It's just hard to take because the people who can put it on have to be national and higher. So when you get to that test, there's just a lot smaller pool of people who can even really like put it on.
Gotcha.
Or people who are willing to take it. It's the combination. And so it becomes hard to find. You almost always, especially here in Utah, you have to travel for it. So it's harder.
Yeah. Damn. I feel like, damn.
Yeah.
So then when it comes to judging, tell me about palate fatigue. I want to talk about like, how long does it take for palate fatigue to kick in? So I've never judged and like, it's a dream of mine is to judge and like be a good judge. I just want to just judge.
You'd be good.
But
what's
like, talk to me about palate fatigue and how you overcome that.
So palate fatigue, palate fatigue is something that I feel like the more often that you kind of practiced judging all these flights of like 10 beers in a row. And when I say a flight, it is like you get an ounce and a half to 2 ounce pour and you are drinking maybe half of that. Like you aren't drinking a ton to get kind of this description of what the beer is.
Okay.
Because that's going to help with your palate fatigue, if not, and also not just getting tanked, you know?
Right.
Because a lot of competitions, especially like commercial brewing competitions versus homebrew, you are having flight after flight after flight. So it'll be like 10 beers and then another 10 beers and then another 10 beers in like 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
And then you have another session or two later that day. There's another three flights.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So there's been, I think from one of the competitions I did, I had like tried 120 beers in like 2 days.
Did you really?
Or something. Because
So what do you do in between these flights? In between the beers?
Things you can do is eat saltine crackers are really great. Dry bread, you know, something that's just a really neutral.
Kind of bland, just whatever.
Just bland and just helps kind of clear that off. Drinking water.
I feel like I'd be bloated too. Just.
Oh, yeah.
God.
And you get done with it and you're like, well, I'm done with beer.
I'm going to get a wine or like some whiskey or
What happens at a lot of competitions is when people then go out because you're with a bunch of beer people. Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, let's go grab a beer. And everyone gets there and they all have very plain, sessionable, just like American Light lagers of just like, okay, this is going to be the smallest thing I can have. Like
I might take a Bud Light at that time, right?
Exactly.
Gotcha. So what if you got like a bunch of high points? Like say you were trying all barley wines.
Oh, yeah.
And Imperials. Like, I feel like I could have three or four Imperials. Let's say Imperial Stouts.
Yep.
I could have three or four. And then I feel like after the fourth one, it'd be all the same.
Yep.
So I feel like whoever I pull from first gets a better judgment than the ones at the end. And that's just kind of.
Got it.
I feel bad. So how do you go about. I'd rather try number 10 first or number 5 second. You know what I mean? Just kind of. Be fair all the way.
The best way to kind of be fair and make sure that you aren't like comparing it to others is to really, and this is something I teach in my class because it's very common to want to be like, oh, when you're trying like say this Belgian blonde and being like, oh, I've had another Belgian blonde that I liked more or something because of these things. It's in our nature to kind of compare things with what we've had before of okay. like, whether it's food or whatever, like, oh, this hamburger isn't as good as
my
that
grandma
place
made
is.
It this way. So yeah. Everything is that. Yeah,
exactly.
Gotta be that good.
So what I try to tell people in my class and stuff is you want to judge the beer just on what you are tasting, nothing else at first. And then once you've kind of filled out the aroma, the flavor, the appearance, the mouthfeel and all those, you want to go through and compare it to the actual style guidelines. And that's why those guidelines are there, because it's supposed to help bring you back to something that is concrete for what that beer should be. Not what you think the beer should be.
Right.
So it's always a heated discussion when you get to some of those final beers of like which one should win. Of some people are like, oh, but I like this beer more. And it's like, well, yeah, we all like this beer more. But it's not as much the style.
According to the guidelines that were set by...
Yeah.
Gotcha.
According to the guidelines, it just doesn't hit the style as much. Like, it happens a lot with pale ales. Like, people will be like, oh, I love this pale ale. This is so much better than these others. And it's like, it's an IPA. Like, it's too hoppy. It's too hop forward. It doesn't have that balance that a pale ale should have.
Gotcha. So, when it comes down to, like, the final five...
Yep.
And people are like... This one, I like this one. We all like this one. They all hit the same clicks. Like they're all on point.
Yep.
How do you go from there? You're like, oh, but this one I like better.
More often than not.
Is it more like a gallery? It's like a fashion show at that point?
Yeah. It's
like top
often
three.
It's just like.
You could lose by just people at the table like that beer more than that beer, but together they're probably the same.
Well,
fantastic.
And that's where like often it'll be like. You get people who are like so adamant about like, oh, it's a hazy IPA. This needs to be like hazy and it's too clear and stuff. And it's like, well, appearance is like 3 points out of 50.
Right.
For like a typical homebrew. So like, how much does that really play into it? And so people start picking all their little things that they're like, oh, I want to push this beer forward as first place because X, Y, and Z. And then other people might be like, well, I agree with the first two, but not the last. I think this is better.
So it becomes a debate at that point,
right? It really becomes a debate at that point for the best of show. More often than not, it's at that point, you're looking in your style guidelines. You're really comparing and getting pretty nitpicky because anything at that point, if you're having that much hard, like that much trouble, like deciding which one goes forward, they're all excellent beers. There's nothing wrong with them. They're all gonna, they could all easily win. It's just which one has that slight advantage.
Damn, that'd be tough.
Mm-hmm. And so often it comes down to the one I see that comes up a lot for what pushes things over the edge is balance. Like we were saying with the Czech Pilsner, balance plays really heavily in beer and it just makes it easier to drink. It has a better, like harmonious kind of combination. Even if it's like an Irish dry stout, which is so pushed forward, like dry, like espresso and roast, if you still have that without being like astringent and like over the top, you can still have a balanced beer.
Yeah.
Even if it's like way off in one direction of like malt and like no hops or very few hops. So balance is more not like riding right in the middle of like hops and malt. It's like balance is right in the middle of that style.
Gotcha, because it all goes against styles, like
yeah.
The style guidelines. So I think what I'm going to do, if I ever judge, I'm going to have Grid City's Taste Balance Finish right there on my like right next to me, and I'm just going to look at that every time.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense, right? Because yeah. Mouthfeel, everything. It's all appearance. The thing, you said the hazy thing. The thing that bothers me about hazies is hazies become a taste, not really an appearance lately. It's not,
yeah.
It's not hazy enough for me. What the fuck?
Yeah. Okay, who cares?
Whatever. Right? Yeah. Just drink it. Like, it's bothering me right now.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the biggest reason why it comes up, though, is because appearance is something that everyone can judge.
Everyone has. It's the easiest one. That's why it's 3 points.
Yeah, exactly. It's the easiest, and it just doesn't matter. It really doesn't.
No.
So, because so many things can affect it. So, for example, head retention is something that you like judge for appearance.
Yeah.
It's in there. If you're wearing chapstick, lipstick, makeup, anything like that, it's going to kill your head almost the second you like drink your first sip.
Gotcha.
It's because those compounds break apart that head and it's just going to go flat. Not flat carbonation, but your head will disappear.
Gotcha.
So it's one of those things, if I'm judging, I don't wear chapstick, I don't wear lipstick and stuff because I know, okay, I'm going to give it the best chance at not being docked for this.
That's going into it.
And so when you get people who are like, oh, this isn't hazy enough and stuff, it might have just been, you know, in the fermenter or the bright tank or whatever a little bit too long and it dropped out some of its haze.
Right.
If they aren't doing more modern techniques with like sure. adding in the hops during fermentation, that really it doesn't matter. And that is why it's only 3 points out of 50 is... it's just doesn't matter ultimately. Flavor matters. And even like mouthfeel, which plays into like your head, mouthfeel is like how carbonated is it and stuff. The higher carbonation it has, generally it's going to have a higher head. Head gives off more aroma. So you want to focus on all of that because it's going to push forward your aroma. It's going to push forward your mouthfeel, how it feels on your, you know, palate. Mm,
gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
But when you're just sitting there and judging and you're like, oh, yeah, it's too hazy or, oh, it might be slightly too orange for the style guideline versus like a true yellow.
That's being nitpicky at that point.
Yeah. And it's just,
gotcha.
There's so many other things to, I guess, judge it on and get nitpicky about
yeah.
before you get to that point.
That's weird to me. That blows my mind.
So,
man, you're blowing my mind right now, Jay.
Yeah.
Good God. So how fun is it to like walk people through these beers and teach people how to drink beers, how to teach people guidelines and styles? Because you yourself have to go through and learn all this information.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to become certified where you're at now?
Much faster. And it's because I took a class. I compare it to, in a lot of ways, I compare it to like college.
Okay.
You don't have to take a class. You don't have to go to college and you can still make a career for yourself and you can still sure. do everything that you probably want to do. It'll just take a little bit longer, possibly. But with the beer class and everything, it's a prep course for that test. You're going through and you're trying out every beer style in an analytical way to learn like what that means, and you're actually trying to taste it so you can get to, you know, a Goza and be like, oh, I know what that tastes like.
Gotcha.
Or some of the harder to find ones, like a California Common, you can't find too many examples of. If you can ever find an Australian sparkling.
Not in Utah right now.
No, yeah. So there's some of these beer styles that are on in BJCP you might never really try except for in that prep course, but you could be tested on it. So it's the same kind of idea of like, it helps your chances with passing. So I took one when I was in Minnesota, passed with flying colors on my tasting exam because I spent all that time doing that class.
Okay.
And it was 3 to 4 hours a week, one day a week for...
It's not bad at all.
Mm-mm, 3 to 4 hours every, I think for us it was every Thursday.
Sure,
and
one night.
It was one night, you spend some time, you drink a lot of beer for 14 weeks, 15 weeks. So it's essentially like a 3-credit course.
Okay.
If you think of it time-wise. For like a semester. And so you put in all that time, you're practicing, you're writing down judging sheets, you're learning how to describe things, you're getting feedback from your other classmates on how they perceive things. And you start learning a lot of really good feedback. Like some people are so like sensitive to like diacetyl or you know, some other off flavors, that when you have the whole class being like, oh, it's actually very low, and one person's like, oh, it's like very high, they can start learning, okay, I'm sensitive to this. My perspective is not accurate to what really is in the beer.
Interesting. Okay. Blows my mind. Oh, my God. Okay, so you have one more beer for us right now.
Yeah.
So let's break her open, because I'm curious. Let me get you a fresh glass for that one.
Awesome.
Tell us what you brought us.
So the last one I brought is Elysian Space Dust IPA. Probably a lot of people have had this. It's been around for some time. And I chose it because... For me, it's a very classic example of just like a Northwest IPA. So growing up in the Northwest, I'm always looking for something that actually has bitterness in it, which is hard to find.
Yeah.
Because bitterness doesn't mean it has to be like astringent or like over the top, but it can be still bitter, and it's supposed to help actually with the drinkability of it. IPAs are meant to be very drinkable beers. They're supposed to be something that you can actually have a couple in a sitting, traditionally, and just like, that's why seasonally the best time that a lot of people are drinking it is in that like June timeframe when everything's starting to get a little bit hotter, and you just want to kick back and have a couple beers that are a little bit higher percent. So this has that showcase of just not being too like over the top, like hazy tropical melon craziness that's going on. It's a more... straightforward, piney, citrus, resinous kind of beer.
Oh, you're speaking my... Oh, it's not hazy enough. Jay, what did you bring me?
I know. It's like you can see through
it. Dump it.
I know. But this is what I grew up having, and it just really...
So this smells like Portland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This smells like Portland. Or Seattle, I guess, for Elysian. Yeah, Seattle. And so that's where... For me, it just hits all those things of the most common one I kind of get is this like almost like candied orange peel.
Okay.
Is a common descriptor I get when you have this kind of like light caramel with the resinous, citrusy characteristic. And it's.
So you say candied orange, I think for me, because I maybe I'm picking up, but I get candied grapefruit.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Grapefruit. That's
same citrus family, right?
Lots of grapefruit. And so that's where, and it's a bitter beer, but it's not like over the top. It's
hits your palate and then it subsides.
Yeah, exactly. It hits you up front and then it's like, it's gone. It's refreshing. Yeah. You could drink a lot.
It is refreshing. And it's crushable.
Yeah. And it's 8.2%.
No, it doesn't taste hot to me.
No, not at all.
You don't get a, you still get malt at the very end too.
Yeah. You get a little bit of malt. And so that's where, for all the people who are so afraid of having like this over the top hoppy beer,
I think IPAs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's, I think a lot of the times, people have had bad examples of where it's astringent, where it's just way too over the top, or the hops come off grassy and like not what you want in a beer. So you just try them out and you find something that works.
Gotcha.
Or the common one that you find in certain regions, like the Midwest was really bad at this, was putting in way too much caramel malt for an IPA. So it becomes this caramely hoppy like combination, and it's just too much malt for what it should be.
So trying to balance it on the malt side.
To make it sweeter or something.
To match the bitterness of the hops at the afterward. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Weird. Interesting. So, I don't like that.
No.
I see why they tried it, but
yep.
Being a beer maker, it does. I don't like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, this is just a classic go-to for me for a Northwest IPA. And
KJ, if I made a candle out of this, how many would you buy?
A lot.
Okay, okay.
Yeah,
like, I joke about this, and I know Diaz is listening right now, but I joke about making beer candles because I smell great beers all the time. But like,
oh, yeah.
Imagine if the three beers we had here were candles. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, I feel like a house pilsner from Grid City movie.
Yeah,
light
be really
it up.
Good.
Like, oh, man.
No, I definitely think it would be good.
That might help all of us, but not drinking so much.
Yeah,
like,
there
I just
you
want
go.
Smell it, and then there you go. I like this a lot. So, yep. What's your favorite IPA then of all time? Is that, that's a hard question, but do you know of one?
Yeah, I have actually a story about it.
Hit me
so,
now. I'm ready.
Perfect. Yeah. My favorite beer of all time is called, it's just Dank IPA is the name of it. It's from Freedom in Hood, Oregon, Hood River, Oregon. And they, when I moved away from Oregon, became something, they were just starting up. They were a very brand new brewery. I think they won like best new brewery the first 2 years they were open. They're a
not bad.
Excellent brewery. If you ever have a chance, they have a very great, great selection of hoppy beers, pilsners, classic beers, like what you would find maybe at like Templin. And so it is, it's a phenomenal brewery. It's in a beautiful location in the Hood River.
It sounds beautiful. It's beautiful out there if no one's ever been.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And so Dank IPA is a seasonal like fall. I think they might do some of it with like their fresh hop release, but it's not strictly their fresh hop release.
Gotcha.
It's supposed to have those more dank kind of like tropical, like deep pine resinous, skunky, not skunky. That sounds like an off flavor, but dank. Like,
right. Dank is great.
Yeah. Dank is great. And so when I moved to Minnesota, you couldn't find anything like that. And so I started getting into home brewing and was trying to like replicate this recipe. Failed miserably a couple times. And so I finally just emailed the brewery. I was just like, hey, I'm trying to replicate this. I no longer live here. Could you send me the recipe or like even guidelines? They sent me the recipe and a 12 pack of bombers.
No way.
For free. And then some extra swag of just like reaching out to them.
That's really cool.
And so they were just like, oh, that's awesome that you're trying to make it. Here's some extra beers
that
to
is
like
so
help your inspiration
cool.
and stuff.
More brewers need to be like that.
And it was great. So I'm a diehard like Freedom fan. I talk them up everywhere I go from it and just like
sold.
Yeah, it's that kind of community that is
that's
just
beautiful.
Amazing to be like, oh, I just sent a random email to the brewer gets back, tells me his recipe and gives me extra stuff. Like
that's really cool.
You can't beat it.
Because I mean Grid City did the same thing where I talked to Jeremy and go, hey, if someone wants to like why do you put your recipe on every can? And mm-hmm. he looked at me straight in the eye and goes, you can try to make it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like,
like
because
it's not
of the rest
take
he's on there.
Business from
yeah.
them.
Like make
good
it.
Luck.
Yeah, go for it. Like, yeah. I mean, he's also doing things in the back, like pH and everything. Like,
you have all the pH, you have the water profile,
he's got
all
different
that
things,
stuff.
But like the recipe, you can just have the recipe, but like, good luck cloning it. Like,
yeah, and like which
oh
malts you're using, if you're using like Wireman
that,
or.
That's so cool. My God.
Yeah.
That blows me away. That's like that right there is one of my favorite stories is about Kevin Templin. Mm-hmm. I talk about him all the time, one of my favorites. But busy man, that guy I feel like is one of the busiest humans in Salt Lake. And I remember Joel and I were needing an ingredient, or no, we needed equipment. And we showed up to Kevin, and he was in the middle of forklifting and doing, he was in the middle of doing laborious things, stopped everything he was doing to give us our his undivided attention, looked us in the eye the entire time, and then whatever we needed, he was on it. And mm-hmm. for the next like 30 minutes, we were his focus. And then once we left, said our goodbyes, sent us with some beers, went back to work.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's how, not just, I guess why I'm biased towards the brewery and the fermentation process here in Utah is I'm seeing that front up and people like us are like super cool. And like, I feel like we need to keep that sacred.
Yeah.
But at the same time, let's not share it. It needs to be shared.
Oh, yeah.
And then take it out. I feel like society in general should be like that.
Yeah.
Like, hey, like go back in the days. Hey, my neighbor, I don't have sugar. Do you have a cup of sugar I could borrow?
Yeah.
Like, that was back in the days. I remember doing that. Getting a neighbor calling, hey, I need brown sugar. Well, I got some.
Yeah.
I'll pay you back. Hey, it's all good. Whatever. It'll take some eggs later. What, you know, what happened to that?
I don't know.
The phone?
That's where, like, you see it so much in this industry of people are just, they like bend over backwards to like help you out. Yeah. I feel like.
But those who don't, and kind of like, we're big dick swinging. We are head honcho. Like,
yeah.
I don't like you.
Yeah.
Okay, then do that. But I don't want any part of you because we want to be friends.
Yeah.
My family.
Completely agree.
And this community is so cool. And I don't want to ever break this beautiful relationship we all have. All right, guys, that'll do it for this episode. But until the next beverage, my friends.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter @TheTastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded @Fuse Audio. Give them a follow @Fuse_Audio.